Let me introduce Orfeo Angelusi. Let's give him a good greeting. Thank you, Doctor. Thank you very much, Dr. Stranges. And please forgive me, folks, for the hoarse voice I have. I've had it for about 10 days. 3 days ago it was so bad I could have entered a Santa Anita and won. Now, I noticed that Mrs. Strange says, I went back to the boat, how did you stand up? Because what I have to tell you will probably be the last time you'll be standing up. You're going to have to lie down after this. It's fantastic, really. Now, I just don't know how to begin it. Because I'm not going to tell the whole story. We only have 45 minutes each to speak here. And it would take 45 hours to even begin to tell you. Because being one of the so-called contactees, if you will bear with me, I naturally have had an awful lot of experiences. And collecting all the highlights and the essential things out of these experiences, I was able to write 2 books out of it. And quite a few pamphlets. So we cannot go through all that. I'll just bring you up to date. I brought this up here for a purpose. Some of you have had this little 20th century times and perhaps purchased it for 25 cents in 1953. Only 8 pages in this in tabloid form. I had this done at my own expense. There's no one who at that time published my story. And it says here, Saucer's first contact revealed. Of course, I thought it was Saucer's first contact. Most people who have already been indoctrinated into work like this already knew that there were such things as space visitors or hierarchies in the whole universe, but I didn't. I was a hardcore contractor in the sort of stucco and plastering and terrazzo business, and all of my friends were down to earth when I came out with a story like this. I had had an awful lot of either insanity or courage, because I knew I would lose all of my friends. But thank God I didn't. As the years passed, they found out that I still retain a little bit of the normal thinking processes that most human beings of us have. So, now the title of the talk is, as Dr. Strange said today, is Fantastic Souvenirs from Space. I don't have anything concrete. I don't have any nuts and bolts or a piece of plastic or crystal to present. I don't think that the space visitors with whom I have been, let's say, in my own contact, would give me anything like that. If they would give me anything like that, that would be interfering with my evolution. Now bear that in mind, that's the key in this. Why would they hand me a piece of something that I could prove came not from this world, when there were men far better than me to even analyze, far more influential people? So therefore they gave me nothing of the kind. But they did give me something very different. First of all, is that I was I'm rather a fundamentalist in the sense of, not in the biblical sense, but in the sense of people every day. You know, I'm the kind of say, well, show me, and then I'll believe it. I have to taste it, and then I know what it's like. I'm not easily sold on advertisement. I'm one of those that the commercials hate because I analyze them, unless I try to think, okay, we go from there. And I was very interested in science, although I never passed ninth grade. And I was doing some research on the polio virus. Again, let me remind you, excuse me for my hoarse voice. That's 1946 back in New Jersey, and I was sending up some mold cultures to be exposed to the cosmic rays to find what structural changes would occur. Fine, eventually we got the answer. Eventually I saw a flying object go off with these balloons. It was very brilliant, very shiny. No one was interested except myself. There were a couple of newspapermen there taking photographs. People were helping me in the experiment. One from Princeton University. And no one was interested, but I was. I was attracted to the sun. The lost balloons never regained the tests. But as I went home that evening, that afternoon, dejected that we lost the balloons in the basket, of course, it came over station, the mutual system of WOR at that time, and all the highway patrol, we call them here, but over in New Jersey, the state police, and announcing on the radio, anybody finding these balloons, please report to so-and-so. Of course, I had my name and address there. We never found them. I was cultivating these cultures every day so that I would have the right growth, the proper growth, according to the proper weather. Because the weather in New Jersey is not like California. When it's sunshine. And when it rains, many of you know that many of us drown for days. Well, anyhow, as I went home and looked at these other cultures dejected, I found the answer. Someone had made these cultures grow immediately, that very same day, into what I wanted. And it could, I had no idea what it was. I just thought it was the temperature. Anybody mentioned to me extraterrestrial or spirits or anything like that at that time, I would have left them off. And yet there was the answer. So I sent these specimens out to Peoria, Illinois. It's the government studies on fungus, things like that. I was actually trying to determine the nature of the polio virus, because it's very fundamental. I came to a conclusion that the polio virus was the beginning of life itself. You know, an atom, we say, has no life. As far as I'm concerned, it has life. But a molecule, say a molecule of water, H2O, has no life. As far as I'm concerned, it has. Another life we mean where it actually pulsates. Heartbeat, something circulates, and this feeling. So, the polio virus is the first beginning of life. It is the inert, inanimate molecule finally taking on what we call life. And from there on, of course, we go to the bacteria and up and to the plankton and the ocean and the fish and man. I believe in evolution, but not the kind of evolution that says I come from a monkey. For the simple reason I never came from a monkey, because many of you might say, well, you're a monkey, that's where you come from then. So maybe I'm arrested there. But evolution does go on. It's all around you all the time. None of us stop to think about it. This very minute it's going on. Things are changing all over the world right now. They were doing so a million years ago, a billion years ago, and they will continue to do so a million and a billion years from now. So I was interested in these things, certainly not in flying saucers, when Kenneth Arnold first sighted them on June 24th, 1947. I was gratified that June 24th happened to be just the day before my birthday. June 25th. So in other words, I figured that Kenneth Arnold and I were the threshold of all this whole business at that time. But time passed on. I found out there's others that entered that threshold far more capable than I am. Well, I finally left New Jersey, came to work at Lockheed Aircraft Corporation in Burbank, in the classics department. This is 5 years after these tests, and I did have an experience of meeting these objects in which I believed not one iota. Not one iota. Anyhow, with my experience, I noticed one thing. When I first saw my real a sign from this shiny object that followed the balloons. There was a very luminous red object at night preceding the car after I got out of work. It was so dim that I could hardly make it out. But I noticed that my eyes were sensitized before I saw it. The night appeared much brighter, as it does anyhow when we come out of a lighted building into the night. First it seems very dark, you know that. Then the retina adjusts itself, and we see it a little plainer. But my retina adjusted itself many times more than usual, so that the night became almost like twilight. And here I saw this red object. And it was pulsating. It was about 2.5 feet in diameter. It was in front of the car and led me on, and this was my first experience. This was a contact. I talked to a man who said, know me only as Neptune, because it means something to you, with the ocean, and this and that. And it went on to very nice, divine sort of speaking. It was excellent English. I never saw him, but he did project on two other screens. Now, it's like this shiny red object, two of them green, and in between was a space. And when that filled in as a television screen, I see a man and a woman. He asked me first if I wanted to see Orion and Lyra. Well, Orion and Lyra just meant something to me, it meant nothing to anyone else. So I already had a picture of them in my mind. And I said, yes, indeed I do. And this screen between the two discs filled in. And it was this wonderful, excellent, handsome man and a woman. Only about up to here. And she was right behind me. Well, there was not a word said between us. I looked at them, and once in a while, I guess my eyes blinked as they usually do with all of us. And at times I would see that they were looking at different parts of me, but I never saw their eyes move. Now, I want you to understand this. These visitors of whom I speak are so sensitive, are so much ahead of us, that they would know that split second when my eyes would blink and then their eyes would shift twice. They did that purposely to let me know how far ahead they were from us. Anyhow, that night I went home and I had to tell my wife why I was late from work. Well, it was better if I told her that I stopped at a bar and I got a good drunk on. Believe me, then she would have been happy. But when I began to tell her what might have happened, she was scared and she went to sleep. I said, that's enough. As far as I was concerned, and she was concerned, I was ready for the men with the white coats. Because this was certainly going to get worse as far as she thought. Well, the next day I forgot all about it. You see, what happened when they sensitized my eyes, it also sensitized my subconscious. Now, how they did it, to this very day, I cannot explain. There's many ways they could have done it. Maybe in wishful thinking, maybe in mental telepathy, maybe in the power of the mind, but I think it was with instruments. Instruments so fine that we today even don't begin to understand them. Even though we have instruments that can bring back a picture from Mars 45 million miles away, still we are not up to these kind of instruments. So these people were way ahead of us. And when my wife began to interrogate me the next day, little by little, being very careful, you know, so that I wouldn't throw the dishes around, I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, last night you can only tell this story. I said, I don't remember. But it's just like a person who really indulged a little too much the night before, far too much. He doesn't remember a thing. So what they had done, you see, contacted me. They had activated my subconscious and subdued my conscious so that I was in their world. All my lifetimes, all my memories, everything was just in their realm. So then they could speak to me. But when they released me from this wonderful control, I was myself again. I didn't remember nothing. But gradually, The subconscious mind always brings it back somewhere, like a cork coming to float from the bottom of the ocean. And eventually you're going to remember it. So they gave me 2 months to think it over. 2 months later, I was taken for a ride at Hyperion Avenue. Hyperion Avenue Bridge, many of you know where it is, between Glendale and Los Angeles. On Riverside and Glendale, whatever you call it. At that time, it was the Los Feliz Drive-In Theater, and it belonged to my uncle. So I was kind of a manager there, over the manager, because I was relative naturally. And my wife was manager of the snack bar. This theater had two screens. We saw one picture on one side and one on the other. Sometimes it was not so busy, the pictures were not so good, so one side would be closed. And only the one side would be shown. Well, not far from the other side, of course, I'd go through the gates, the metal gates, under the Hyperion Avenue Bridge, and I'd be home in 14 units that my uncle had built there. Of course, we had a lot of friends there that lived with us. This particular night, through the 60 days, exactly 60 days. This first experience, of course, was May 23rd, 1952. The second came July 23rd. May, June, July, exactly 60 days, 1952. And I was walking away from the drive-in theater. I didn't feel well enough to go to work. And as I opened the gate and walked over, I saw something very hazy, a very semi-sphere. Take that Earth here, that wonderful Earth. Cut it in half as you see at the equator, and the bottom would be the floor. Leave the bottom out, and there was the ship. Built in perfect structure, strength. As you know, the Ark has strength. And but I couldn't see anything. It was hazy, like the mist you see around white at night on a foggy night. Yeah, I could see right through it. Yeah, I felt it belonged to myself, because here I had that sudden lift again, like I had 60 days before. Wonderful, I was walking on velvet. I had no pains, all my tensions, everything just released. And I walked into it as if I belonged there. A door slid silently, open, closed again. I sat in a comfort chair, and as I looked down, of course, the door closed, and here I was in this little, whatever it was, igloo, I call it. And now I couldn't look out through the side of it. How were they able to let me see through the entire ship? Yet when I was inside, I could not see through one wall. This is not fantastic. This is polarization of the molecules of plastics and crystals. And change color. Give off any kind of color you want. And of course the inside lit up by itself. The whole ship seemed like an effervescent light. All different scintillating colors. Like a mother pearl. I knew, but deep within me, because of things that I had studied, things that I had written on the nature of nature, the atoms, molecules, I knew that this was all possible. This is what I had to experience. They didn't have to explain to me. I believe at that time there was another man anywhere that could have explained all this at the same time it was being shown to me. Then there was a little bit of music. I felt a little push behind the seat, which was made almost for my body absolutely comfortable. And it was also scintillating color like the rest of the ship, only it was soft. The ship was hard, tall, strong. There's not a meteor that could harm it. It was made of the strongest, not even molecules, atoms intertwining with each other. So there's nothing that could destroy it or harm it, except an atom bomb, which is universal power, basic power. Well, I went off and I was riding, and I felt wonderful. Then suddenly it went out. Now, remember this, because these are the souvenirs we're going to speak about. Suddenly the ship went out. The light, it was absolutely dark. Whatever control they had on me, they released, and I was myself. Now I was afraid. Where am I? What am I doing? I was feeling motion. Am I going crazy or what? Then suddenly the ship lighted up again. Again, they controlled me. My subconscious was brought up, and I was again one of them. And now I heard music, beautiful rendition, not their music, but our music. I knew the song. Please bear with me. I'm not trying to make a ridiculous thing of myself. There was fools rush in where angels fear to tread. But I never heard that arrangement before. I didn't even know the words to it. And here I heard the words for the first time, and from then on I know every word. And to this day I know the words of the song. It was by the voices of Walter Schumann. Of course, Walter Schumann died a couple years ago. But I had never heard that. It was a new orchestration or arrangement. A few days later, of course, after this experience, I had heard it on the radio over KPLL. Well, that's, I remember this, but where did it happen? Now, when this ended, the record is 2 minutes long. Before the record played, it was about a half a minute, before the darkening of the ship. Here I was, when the record ended, beautiful rhythm. Then they made part of the ship in front of me transparent, immediately, as if they opened the window, but there was no window open. And I saw one huge rainbow that covered the entire field of vision. And that was the Earth. It was 9:30 at night, so the sun was on the other side. And I could see nothing but darkness inside. Once again, my eyes were sensitized. Now I could see plainly. A beautiful, deep, black, blue, scintillating movement. And I could see the outline, here and there, clouds. It was vague, of course, at night. Los Angeles, and then I thought, my God, I must be 1,000 miles away. I can see the entire Earth, but yet it covers the entire field of vision. So eventually, in later calculations, they determined it was 1,000 miles away because it required 1/8 of the diameter. The diameter of the Earth is 8,000 miles. I would have to be 1/8 of that distance away in order for it to cover the entire field of vision and yet see it. A rainbow was the atmosphere, reflecting or refracting the sunlight, which was on the other side. Now, of course, you know, years later, the astronauts described this very same phenomenon. This is beyond description. Of course, they see it every hour and a half because to them, when they're in orbit, the day is an hour and a half long. As you orbit around the Earth there, if you live on the Earth, the day is 24 hours long, but to the astronaut, it's only an hour and a half. Every 45 minutes, it's midnight. Every 45 minutes, it's noontime. Then he sees these beautiful sunsets, these rainbows around the Earth. And then it comes again and again. Imagine what they have to go through, and yet keep their mind on their work. That's the kind of men they have to send up there. Anyhow, I was permitted then to look away from the Earth and look into space, stars. They seemed to be in every direction, all different colors, according to their distance and brightness. And see, some of them seemed to be right up to the ship that I could have put my hand on and grabbed it. Yet they were, of course, any one of them would have been 4 light years away, because that would be the closest one, 4.5 light years away, which would be Alpha Centauri. Proxima Centauri and Wolf 59 and all these. I was like, how can you navigate in a field where there's nothing to go by? But they knew. Because then suddenly, they gave me a third perspective or a third dimensional view. All they did was polarize the ship, and all the stars seemed to be in the right distances and proportions. And then a mothership came into view from the right, about 900 feet long. It was the same structure as my little ship here that carried me. That ship carried, I don't know how many of theirs, equal to any of our ocean liners or zeppelins or dirigibles. But that was one of the small ships I learned later on. At first I thought it was huge. Now, think back why the ship had darkened for a while when I went up. Time went on. I was brought back to Earth. Again, my mind was clouded back to my normal self. And now, of course, I had become interested in flying saucers. Anything I could read in the newspapers, I was saving until I had piles. And just the word saucers, even if it was about the thing under the cup, to me, it was like magic now. This is like, I just loved it. Before that, I hated it. But the world was interested. Headlines were still appearing 5 years after Kenneth Arnold. But I had a different kind of interest. Mine was deeper and inner. I felt it was going to land any day. I really did. And I began to voice my stories here and there. Now you can imagine what happened. That was when I began to lose my friends. In fact, almost my two sons, and they were small kids then. And then, 30 days after this experience, which would be 90 days after the very first experience, I meet the man behind the voice, under the same Hyperion Avenue Bridge. He had a suit on that looked like, well, let's say, to make it brief, a ski suit. But it was scintillating in color. I was walking under the bridge to go toward home. And I forgot all about flying saucers. In fact, I denied them to my friends down at the snack bar, my wife. It's another day, I didn't go to work. I called in, I was too sick to go to work. But I wasn't too sick to talk with Neptune. Well, anyhow, I see this man coming from the other side. At first I was afraid. Where did he come from? He couldn't come from anywhere under his fences. The man must have some malicious thought in his mind. And as he walked by, but his walk was so elegant. Something about him from the distance was so good, he couldn't be afraid. It just radiated. And as I walked past him, of course there's gravel, a lot of gravel on this bridge. You could hear every footstep. And I heard his. And as I saw him, he says, "Greetings, Orfeo." That's the same words he used on the very first night with that red object, green, and the two green objects, greetings, another friend. He says, "You remember one, Neptune, no doubt." I said, "Yes, I do." And as he re-emerged from under the bridge, the lights which were on top of the bridge now shone upon us. I could see this apparel that he had, kind of tied around the neck, scintillating. And it would just seem to disappear in sections like little holes like water in the moonlight. Then I figured immediately this was a super ionized plastic crystal suit, which, under just a little more control than the mothership, could make him disappear altogether. And yet he's there, in person, not spiritually dissolved. I mean, fact. And this is scientific fact. Alright, so we went on, and I noticed him, I took it in, and he knew I was taking it in. Otherwise, they would not have compacted me. We walked down to the banks of the Los Angeles River, and it was just a little trickle of water right in the center. As many of you know, the Los Angeles River is usually dry. You can pick one toes up any part at any time. But this one, there was that trickle, and we talked and talked. And he said that I would eventually become one of the believers, one of the kind of persons with a mission. But in due time, only when I accept it. Up until now, you've seen everything you have to give. But you will, 6 or 7 months from now. I had no idea what he meant. I had no idea what he meant. I had put some things in my mind, deep into the subconscious, which would come back into my memory only 6 or 7 months later to fully indoctrinate me. And anyhow, this trip that I took above the earth, now bear with me, I saw this ray of light. After I heard them, a rendition of the Lord's Prayer, done by the tabernacle, the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, because I recognized it. And then I heard, of course, music that was out of this world, that was theirs. They had no instruments. Music that was already in the ethers, which they correlated into orchestration. And, is this the answer? anyhow, this is beautiful, wonderful music. We couldn't repeat it here. No instant. It was already in the ethers, like radio waves always around us now. And it was tuned into TV waves. They're there. Radio waves from stars, what they call quasars, and that's how they find them. It's all over. All you have to do is modulate. That's what they give you. Music of the spheres. But anyhow, when I woke up to the reality of the thing, it was only my memories beginning to come back after this third experience. He said he would no longer contact me. That's all. He had no more to give me. All that I could understand, they gave me. And whatever came out later, it was still within my understanding. Otherwise, that we could not interfere with evolution. You were ready for it, so we'd give it to you. But because you understand and understood. But then why all these visitations? Why all these sightings and observations from flying saucers, from these pilots? I figured, wait, we must ourselves be becoming space visitors. Otherwise, they would not have interfered with us. And we know, of course, as the years went by, we were already becoming space visitors. And they knew that, so they were not interfering. Never once did they give me one bit of knowledge that I didn't already suspect within my inner self. And whatever they showed me, which I never even thought of before, was already here within me, so they were not interfering. So he says, now, the road will open. Walk it as you will. Which means you're a free man. We cannot disturb you. You can abuse it. You can capitalize it. Do anything you want. But that will be your own fault, your own downfall. But walk it wonderfully. Because what you've learned, you know, once you lived long, many years ago, planets that destroyed themselves because they became scientifically perfect, but spiritually barren. I thought, well, am I spiritually barren? No. I think of the universe. I think of the God that is. I read the Bible. I've read it several times. The New Testament. I've read the Bhagavad Gita. I've read all of the Light of Asia. And since these experiences, of course, and actually, being a Christian, I can actually stay with the Christian Catholic. I'm born, and there I am. These things mean little to me. I'll throw everything overboard if it can be proven to me it's false. I don't care what concept it is. So anyhow, time went by. And after this experience of this night, he said, now, your story at first will be like that little trickle of water you see there in that river. But you have seen this river overflow its banks during the rainy season with a roar. Yes, indeed, and it wasn't long ago. That's the way the story will become eventually. And of course, today it's becoming with everybody. He said, you will be alone, alone, but I smile with love on your enhanced minions. Well, I didn't know what he meant at the time. Because then, what he meant was that there were others already prepared long before I was. And they, he's smiling upon with love. But there's troubles to go through. They cannot interfere with our evolution. We have wars, we have disease, we have poverty, we have starvation, and all kinds of suffering. I have suffered ever since. But my faith is still with me, and my faith is still with God. Because I find that there's a reason for all this. I believe I live over and over and over and again, and one day we will all be perfect. Then we shall know all of our lifetimes. That's what he meant. But I didn't know then. But during these experiences, I never knew until 6 months later. I woke up and I dreamed that I was Neptune. I wasn't dreaming, it was real. For 2 weeks I was Neptune and I was Orpheo. The subconscious was beginning to come up. And remembering what Neptune remembered of his spacecraft, his big spaceship, which is far bigger than that mothership I saw, 10 miles in diameter, with 500,000 of their own kind, the most retarded of their people, aboard, and the most retarded of their people are far superior to the most intelligent of any of us on Earth combined. to measure for any art. And here all I could see was, they permitted me only to see, or he did, the little hut that I was in, or the little plastic building. And I heard nothing but light and thunder. And as I went outside, I saw it seemed to be a big dome, 5 miles up, and 5 miles, or 10 miles in diameter. Here I was in the center. Lightning and thunder, big wheels of lightning, bolides, lightning balls, electrical, this and that, and thunder all the time. And I thought that I was on a piece of a planet once destroyed by people like myself, called the Luciferians, who had rebelled, for instance. Now then, we have to go along with the full story of this, but symbolically it's true. Why didn't let me think that? So I wrote it that way in my first book, The Secret of the Saucers, which had gone into 5 printings. Well, I wasn't able to explain it, so I didn't. But I wrote it as it happened. I wish I could have explained. Why did you start near the ship when I went up? I couldn't explain that. So I wrote it anyhow I couldn't. But every other thing I explained. His disappearance before my eyes, I had to explain, otherwise I wouldn't have said it. Many other things I explained in the first book. And it was only the beginning. In fact, much of it explained in this little newspaper that I put out. But it was only the first attempt. And I noticed, now here's one of the souvenirs. The printers left out the date. The date had belonged right here, February 19th, 1953. They showed me the proof of that, and it wasn't on the here. I wondered it on there. Who left it out? Even while the thing was in print. Space visitors. They could have reprinted this whole thing, and they're exactly opposite from what I had said. Even after the printers had set the type, if they wanted. That's their science. And not only then, but they would let their children do that. Now, do you follow this? Just for a hobby. That would be their children's hobby. Their learning, see? The love of pure learning. That's all that would be left to us in perfection. So anyhow, I went on and on, and I had to begin to tell the story. And, of course, I was ridiculed right from the start. But then some people became interested. In Hollywood first, of course, where all of us are. And here and there, and then all over. The next thing I know is it turned out to be as Neptune had said. But I smile with love on your enhanced minions. They're already there. And I was one of the latecomers. Although, even if the story is one of the first ones, I think the first to be printed in this manner, still in all, I was one of the latecomers. Well, anyhow, you find there a sense of eternity. There's nothing new under the sun. You only awaken to things. Going on. Now, I wrote down some of these things that I pursued in my other writings so that I will remember what these souvenirs from space are. The rest of the story, many of you know. Of course, we've had since then everywhere conventions. Many of the names whom I won't mention because I may leave somebody out. Right here today, you know the names of many others. And you, the listeners, are as was it Christ who said that John the Baptist of all the prophets was the great, as great as any of them. But the least one of you who enter into the kingdom of heaven are as great as John the Baptist, so great. So feel that way. Now, in the 20th century Times, they came out, I noticed in one section of it, they mentioned me and Neptune undergoing this here meeting in another world, and the printers, and it wasn't the printers, misspelled his name by one letter. It made it sound very strange. And it misspelled my name by one letter and made it sound very strange. It wasn't until later that I knew the reason for this. I thought it was a typographical error. But after I had written the rest of the story and brought it out to a book, The Secret of the Saucers, I found that was exactly when he became I and I became him. Now, if any of you want an explanation of this, I will give it to you, but we have no time now. Real essences. And I don't mean the spirit or subconscious or mental telepathy. So, there's a souvenir left right in there. They did that, not the printers. The printers showed the proof that that was right. Wonderful. That's one. The hydrogen atom. Remember when they had baptized me with this ray that came right here? And I had seen it 3 or 4 days later. There was no pain. I saw a white flash. Now we call it a laser beam or whatever we want to call it. But theirs was much better. It was one ray and that's it. There was no pain. In a few days I developed into a sore. And the sore died down and it was a beautiful hydrogen atom. The four little lines going this way and that. All right. This is fantastic, I know that. So I let that go by for a couple of months and this almost disappeared, but it was there. Finally at work at Lockheed, when I began to tell this story, they had heard it. One night we were at work, there was a loud crash, as though a truck had suddenly dropped down a load of lumber of 20 or 30 tons, rain, and we all looked around, and I felt only a tingle on my finger. Everyone was looking around to see if there was a short in these big high voltage wires here or there. There was none. They looked at me, and here I had a smile on my face. I said, well, what happened? I was looking at my finger. Gradually, it was welling up, just like as though there was yeast in there, and just right before their eyes, and they came around, well, what is that? What happened? What did you do? I said, nothing. I looked at these men, I said, remember, boys, what I told you about? They looked at me, they grew pale, and they walked away, and they wouldn't talk to me for the rest of the night. Once in a while, I seem to sneak a look at me. I said, it's the only explanation I have. He said, but that sounded like 20,000 volts. I said, I know it did, but that's what happened. That's all, nothing. I think it has your attention. So, they would have nothing to do with it. Then came election time, November 1952, Ike and Stevenson. Many of you remember. The bets were 2-1 that Stevenson would win, of course. That's what the polls all said. I wasn't interested. I was not interested in flying saucers. Things on Earth meant nothing to me. Yet, when I went into the little Atwater district of the post office to pick up some stamps and envelopes to leave home before I go to work, I came out of the post office and noticed that everything was kind of slow. There was not much traffic, and I thought, I wondered why. I see a flag in a polling place. Oh, it's just voting time, and I didn't even vote. My gosh, maybe I wasn't supposed to. Anyhow, I wonder who's going to win. Now, again, bear with me. Asked as much as if a voice had said. Ike, of course, about 6,300,000. So, I thought, well, now what's happening? But I felt so elated with that list again, that I was so short. I went home, dropped off the envelopes and the stamps, and shouted to my two boys who were with other boys from the U.S. playing around that I could win by 6,300,000. I said, write it down, remember this. Well, of course, I was now really crazy as far as they were concerned. But the kids all ran around here and there. He says, Ike is going to win by this net. They said, well, who said it? He says, they used to call me Orville. Orville said it. They thought, well, it's enough of that. So I went to write it, and now what did I do? My name will be mud because Stevenson's going to win. See, I was no longer under their control. So I arrived at work on Riverside Drive, which became Victory Boulevard. And after the Griffith Hills disappeared, I looked to the west where the sun was setting. Remember, this was 3:30. The sun was pretty well down. I see a shining object going right along in the direction I was going to the distance. It was bobbing up and down like this, like a wheel going around. And it was going up and down. But this is no plane, this is no nothing I know. I thought, well, here's the experiences again. I thought they were through with me. Well, they were through with the messages, but not these things. Phenomenon. I said, my gosh, I said, should I say this at the plant? Should I predict this? Well, I said, no, I just couldn't. Because my name really would be Mud then. I never predicted anything, so they thought I was crazy enough by telling some of these little stories about flying saucers. And me contacting them, just the inklings were so. As I turned to the right, to go into the parking lot, the object turned to the left, and I couldn't see it any longer because now I was looking at its edge. Then it turned around the other way, and it bobbed up the other way. Now, I had that little listing. I'm going to say it. I'm going to predict it. So I went to work, the whistle blew, and it was time to go to work. Everyone, who are you betting on? You want to bet on Stevenson? I don't bet. I said, wait a minute. I said, I will win by 6,300,000. Oh, they were all crazy. They make any kind of bet on that. 70 to 1, 100 to 1, or anything. I could have cleaned up. So I put a note. I wrote it, and I put it on with masking tape on the wall. And asked the other ships to please leave it. So about 1,000 people saw it. That I grew winning by 6,300,000 when the final tallies were in. So, they all felt sorry for me. Poor little fool, it says, he's like a kid. So, anyhow, the next day we knew I had won, but not by that time. The next day went by, and it was rolling up the margin. Finally, I bought a paper and went, I've got three headlines in the Los Angeles Times. They have them on record. Ike, just same words I used, Ike wins by 6,300,000. So I bought the paper and I left it on the bench where everybody comes to. I didn't say a word, I just left the headlines there, right next to this little note that I left. What about my work? No one will talk to me. That was the end. Now they knew that something was wrong. They thought he's an invader. There are such things. And who knows what he's going to do next? He's going to lift the Lockheed plan and bring us all up to Mars. So anyhow, it didn't happen. I couldn't do a thing after that. Now, I'm not a predictor. I'm not a prophet, but I am writing one now that's called Millionaire Prophecy. And it will come out in about 2 or 3 weeks by Golden Dawn Press. I just felt urged. This earth is going to the dogs. And I feel everyone should contribute their little bit, and mine is this prophecy of what's really going to happen. And also what could happen if we all woke up. Anyhow, to me, these are the souvenirs. Now, what about this darkening of the ship? Let's go back to this. I wrote a second book, Son of the Sun, as told to me by a physician, Adam. He had the same experience, much better than mine. He was able to tell me where they came from, so I wrote it. I was not on the planet Lucifer, but in a huge spaceship on Venus, where he was. He could explain it, so therefore the book to me is much better. But it didn't sell as well as the first book. It's a little deeper. It goes into the sun and out again is the last chapter, and explains how it's done. Now then, says, Adam, did you also have this experience when he told me this story back in 1954? Of the ship darkening? He says, yeah, now, I don't know how you brought that up. And it was at about 1.5 minute after you left the Earth. He says, yes, and it was only a slight movement. Well, then what? He said, well, of course, you only went 1,000 miles up, but I went straight to Venus at 10 million miles an hour, which is not approaching the speed of light yet. Of course, he explained a lot more. He actually met all these people. How wonderful they were. Now, I said, well, what does it mean? He said, I don't know. So, out of both books, there's no explanation offered. And then, of course, we know today, the satellites are put in orbit at about 100 miles out in space around the Earth. And that's when the ship darkened on us. As much as to say, you will know when the time comes why we did that. But we can give you the information now that would be telling you things you don't know. Now, many of you have heard that some of these astronauts have seen at that elevation, at that orbit, they've seen these white flaky papers that seem to stretch into infinity. How many of you remember that? Would you please raise your hands? Good. So, there's part. So, anyhow, of many, many other souvenirs that have come to pass. And so therefore, there is my story to you tonight. And my time is up, as I understand.